My name is Judy Madison, and you are sitting in a women's support group, and it looks like you all fit. We just raised the question today, is it okay for me to be who I am? Because these are times when we have all lived such different experiences. If you look at, first of all, our age differences, the range of ages here, which we have a lot of difference. And I know for myself, I find that women, even 5 years younger than I am, have such a different outlook about things. And I'm sure you experience that too on either side of your particular age or experience. And I'm going to just introduce some ideas, and I will recommend a couple of books to you that I think are interesting, but then I really think we get more out of it if we talk among ourselves. Part of the struggle we have now is society, whatever that is, seems to put expectations upon us, which we all feel to a different extent. And we try to figure out, now, who am I supposed to be? Should I be working or shouldn't I? Those kinds of things. We get all these rules going for us. And we have difficulty sorting out whether we are supposed to be behaving in a particular way that we interpret society to be giving to us, or whether there is some way we can be ourselves. Thus the question, is it okay to be who I am? And probably the tension in that question is, am I being all that I can be? That's certainly a tension for me. There have been many times in my life when who I was turned out to not have been enough. You know, so I keep thinking, yes, I can be more, I can learn more, I can experience more, I can hurt more, I can love more, all of those kinds of dynamics. So that's what we're just going to kind of grapple with. I think we learn from each other, and we'll just kind of see how it goes. If I think it's getting out of control, I'll pull it all back. Yes, Lord, we need liberation from the bonds of man, capital M. I wrote this 7 years ago. Or men that hold us fast, apart from you. We need to know that we achieve, that human worth is measured not in roles, but in being, in fulfilling who I am, whether in a home or office, in a yellow dress or blue jeans. Lord, show me who I am, clever or vengeful, compulsive or shy, mother, maid, or musician, in every occupation, dignity, me. Liberate me from fears that I may fail or that someone else will surpass me. Loose the chains of habit that would keep me stagnant or denying my successes. Give me courage to try harder, to dare more in quest of love. Lord, only when I comprehend that whether I'm a woman, a wife, a poet, a secretary, a teacher, or the boss, or the hireling, I am first a child of yours. Only when I take that love will I be free. So that's to sort of set the stage for us. Let me tell you about a couple of books, first of all. The name of this book is Women's Reality, and they use it a little bit at some of the seminaries. It's published in Minneapolis. What would you say about this book, Nancy?
Well, it made me angry at the beginning. I thought that she was coming down pretty hard on our friends, the males. But I realized that it's probably because I had bought into the system. And as I got near the end, I really began to appreciate something she was saying.
So that reading a book like that will be an experience, won't it? Whether or not you agree with it. Now, sometimes we're sort of afraid to have those experiences, to kind of get challenged, to disagree. One of the things we may have been taught, and this may not apply to you, but you may have been taught it's not really nice for a girl to disagree. The reason I use girl is because that's when you were taught it. And at least most of us were taught to raise our hands and be polite and not too noisy if possible. And don't lose control. And some of those kinds of lessons come through pretty strongly. And so we grow up a little afraid of ourselves. Very recently, I've been in tremendous pain, not physical pain, emotional pain. And there's that feeling within me, don't lose control. Don't lose it. Now we see that in men also, who don't even let themselves cry. But they can yell better than we can. They can be angrier usually than we can. Society does teach us some of those kinds of lessons. So that's one dynamic of being a woman and kind of coming to grips with that inside of us. And I think women's reality would help us see some of the systems that keep us locked up. Not locked up by men, just locked up as a human being. For they too have their own self block, where we keep them. I love the example of, you know, we want help in the kitchen, but they better do it right or we're going to be in there telling them how they ought to do it. They who have never had that experience. So there's that thing about wanting help, but wanting it only in the way we want it, which isn't, you know, that's not too neat. That's like children experience that all the time, of course. Well, anyway, that's one dynamic of it, that whole emotional side of it. Another is the cultural patterns, I think, that we live in. And the book I like about that I read not too terribly long ago, is called Kiss Sleeping Beauty, Goodbye. And both these books are in the bookstore. A lot of books are in the bookstore. Some are very theological, and others are very more personal or practical, I guess. And in this book, we see ourselves, women, portrayed in fairy tale characterizations. So if you think about Sleeping Beauty, she was someone who passively laid back and waited for Prince Charming to come and give her that magic kiss, and they'd ride off into fairyland together. And to some extent, all of us have bought into that. We're all waiting for that perfect prince to come. And boy, are we disappointed when he turns out to be somebody who leaves his socks on the bedroom floor. It's a real trip to lay on men, in some respects. And also a real dodge, sometimes, from the world. A companion book almost to this is called The Cinderella Complex, written by someone entirely different, who is talking about our being afraid as women to be independent. That we are scared to lose that dependence. I sure do see that in myself sometimes. I want to tell you, I'm one of these strong people, and I'm going to real self-sufficient, too much for my own good and all that stuff, but I'm not talking about people opening doors for me either. There's a part of me that wants not to admit that I prefer acting dependent in certain emotional ways. It's almost schizophrenic. But yeah, it's hard to become attuned to all that, but I think we have those double dynamics working in us all the time. The Cinderella Complex is rather easy to read. It's about a woman who was a very successful businesswoman. She had been married, divorced, and then had an excellent career. Met someone, 7 years I think she'd been in the business world, and then moved to wherever it was he was working outstate New York someplace, and watched herself lose her confidence and become completely dependent on this person again in emotional ways. Not financial ways, I don't mean that. And it was quite a struggle for her to come to grips with whatever happened to the person who lived in New York. Because she was satisfied with that person, she liked that person. So that's what Cinderella Complex is about. Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, Cinderella, all appear here. Snow White is a little harder to understand. Cinderella and Women's Work is that title. I will share with you some of the other. Goldilocks and the Search for the Perfect Family. Beauty Exercises the Beast. And the epilogue is called Exit the Frog Prince. I found this really stimulating for me. Sleeping Beauty as an example. Oh, God, I shouldn't talk too much here. One of the thoughts in Sleeping in the Sleeping Beauty characterization is that there are three levels of development, you might say, in all of us. And that first one is that we do what others kind of want us to do. We please them. And if you can sort of picture yourself 3 years old or so. I mean, that's kind of the way we are when we're little children. And it's sort of altruistic. You know, it goes with the Christian faith to be kind and do what other people want of us. But then there's a second step where we do things on an ethical basis because we have a sense of it being right. It fits in with rules. And it isn't just to please people, it's because we've made some sort of decision about it being the better thing to do. And then there's a third stage, though, that a lot of us never get to. That first stage, the very first one, other people are in charge. The second stage, we're sort of in charge, but the rules are coming from outside us. They aren't formed from within us. And the third stage is a transcendent stage where we're doing this because of something much greater than us. It's really very theological kind of thing. I can't review it adequately for you in this session. That's why I recommend the book. It pushed me a lot in a very pleasant way to be learning about myself.
Will you give the title of that book?
Kiss Sleeping Beauty Goodbye. It's written by a woman who's in the Catholic Church. I believe she's been a nun, or is. She's a professor at a Midwestern university, a member of a religious community of women based at Villa Maria, and has worked a lot on women's spirituality. One of the fun things about this is that she's able to catch, she's kind of imaginative from time to time, and you really can kind of catch yourself in it, and you have to kind of chuckle at how it fits us from time to time. What are the things that are hardest for you at your stage in life to cope with in terms of self-image, role expectations? You know what I mean by role expectations? That's when everybody thinks that you're going to automatically like to cook. Oh, I hate to cook. I don't hate it, but I don't really get a big thrill out of it. What's your experience?
Well, one of the things that I've been struggling with for about 2.5-3 years is that I placed my self-image very strongly in the success or failure of my children. Partly because I was brought up to believe that the only way I was worthwhile was to do things perfectly. So that anything I attempted to do, I must be able to do perfectly, especially being a mother. I mean, that should come naturally. As a woman, I should be a perfect mother without ever trying. And when my oldest child was having some very, very difficult times, involved in chemicals, ran away from home, was gone for 6 months, and we had no idea where he was, that almost devastated me as a person. And it's been, you know, a real struggle to learn that I am a child of God who is worthwhile, whether or not my children are successes or failures. And I'm getting there.
And whether or not you are a success or failure.
Yeah. Well, I didn't worry about that. I was worried about my kids.
A lot of guilt in motherhood. Have you ever felt that? Mm-hmm. A lot of it. I'm never too keen, and I belong to a church where I really hated Mother's Day. Because there's a lot of stuff laid on you. Usually in the form of, my mothers are wonderful, and I'd sit there thinking, getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
My husband and two sons all are recovering from clinical dependency. Alcoholism, and they have from 1.5 to 2.5 years of sobriety. and reestablishing new relationships, new roles, getting out of the old patterns of relationship with my sons, relationship with my daughter, as she and I both grow now and on while they're growing in AA. All that's very painful, very difficult. And then at the same time, they all are grown and have left home. A little bit of coming back somewhere between college and so forth, but they're from 18 to 24, so they're pretty much gone. So suddenly now, my husband and I are also alone for the first time. And a third role, I just lost my father, and my mother is 80 and has just plunged into senility with my father's death in January. She's just gone downhill very, very fast, and we're waiting for a nursing home placement. And suddenly I'm the parent, and she's the child. And so all those roles are very, very difficult for me to change.
How many of you have ever registered for yourself in a motel? Hotel, motel. Pretty good. Part of them.
Not when I'm with Jeff.
He always does it when you're with him. Well, there are these little things that, I mean, there's some things that are nice not to have to think about. But it's true. Both Nancy and I experienced this week that we introduced someone by what their husband did.
We both caught ourselves.
Yeah, right after we said it.
Cut out your time.
I think the difficult thing that I find is that I went into a marriage with a very traditional point of view, and I really expected to quit my job and to raise a family and do all the traditional sorts of things that women were expected to do, and have come through those years and now have made or have attempted to make some changes in my marriage. And the resistance that I feel is there is very difficult for me to handle. And I think, you know, the whole thing about sharing the domestic and the nurturing roles, when your husband has not been doing that and you have the one, you're the one that's attempting to make those changes, there very often is a lot of resistance. And he certainly has a choice, he has many choices in how he's going to deal with those changes. And some of them are not very good.
I think I saw a lot of hits.
And you basically both have a great commitment to the marriage, but that doesn't mean that everything's going to work out just smoothly.
Mm-hmm. A lot of you experience that? What's the feeling you get when you try something you've never tried before? What are the feelings involved in that?
Fear.
What are we afraid of?
Unknown failure.
Unknown rejection. Failure, rejection. Good.
But when you succeed, wow.
Yeah.
I think the being afraid to try it is worse than the fear when you do try it. Mm-hmm. At least that was my experience.
Being paralyzed beforehand is what's more painful.
Mm-hmm. Once you're at the point where you're ready and willing to take that risk, it somehow seems to work. But you don't know that ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Our aftercare counselor says you stay stuck where you are because it's comfortable. And my husband says, God damn it, Nancy Jo, it's not comfortable, it's just familiar. You know.
Yeah.
I think, too, that if you, like what I said before about believing that I had to do everything perfectly, if I attempted it at all, I had to know ahead of time that I could do it perfectly. And so not only being, you know, afraid of trying something new, but then not reaching this goal of perfection. And once I learned, and I don't even know how, once I learned that it was okay to not be perfect, you know, to just try something for the fun of trying it, then it got so much easier to try anything. because I gave up that whole expectation of being perfect at.
I was thinking about one of the things we've learned to do real well, I think it's in Women's Reality, but I don't remember which book, is listen. To be good listeners, and that's one of the things I've noticed about myself in the last year. If I'm with a man, I play listener role much more than I offer. I have a sister-in-law who said that her favorite friend where they lived was a man who was an attorney who used to ask seriously about her day. She had two small children and she was not working outside the home. But he wanted to know what it was like, you know, well. And she said she felt so appreciated somehow. She felt so human, so alive.
You find yourself listening sometimes and thinking, I'm listening. I mean, I'm nodding and almost as though you're role playing. You're really not hearing, but you're going through all emotions. And all of a sudden, when I'm in the office sometimes, I'm caught up in that. And I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute, listen to the words. Don't just play the game. Really listen.
I find myself listening and thinking, oh, this is so boring. And I'm not sure, but I mean, we all do that somewhat. But I think that if it were a woman, I might interrupt her. Politely, but I might find a way to get into the conversation. We give away power.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have a certain amount of hope, particularly for my daughter, that, and perhaps for kids her age and as they, you know, go through their 20s, that maybe they're developing some of these kinds of skills of taking care of themselves, knowing what's important for them, without, you know, being just, I guess, what we all would think of as being the kind of a liberated woman that probably most of us wouldn't want to be, but at the same time having a mind of her own and thinking and being able to function without feeling that she was unable to function unless she had a man. And I think for those of us who may be 40 or more, and if you've been through a divorce, you find out that, you know, you're going to have to function in a whole lot of ways that you hadn't maybe anticipated. And it's a growing experience.
Some of the best feelings I've gotten in my whole life is when I'm just taking care of myself and my kids. It's not all bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In fact, they were exhilarating. So the first time I started the lawnmower, you know, I mean, I just went.
Hooray, I did it.
Sorry, I always pulled it out of the. In fact.
One of the things that has happened to us is that, for example, men are given the opportunity to be in competitive sports, particularly in a country like ours. And with that comes the experience of success and failure, because you just don't win every game unless you're just a magic team. And so they learn how to lose. So they aren't as afraid of losing and failing as many times women are. Our things are much more, and you know, how do you know if you win or lose when you're a mother? Mm-hmm. Or when you're pleasing people, which is one of our primary roles. You can't tell that, it isn't so tangible. And so that makes us a little more fearful. So then when we have those opportunities to do those measurable things, like making a lawnmower work, it is exhilarating. And confidence builds, I find for me, it's multiple, in multiples. A little one like that turns into two or three very quickly.
Another role that we play is mediator. Not just mediator in that we solve problems between people. Are you familiar with the columnist Ellen Goodman?
Mm-hmm. How many of you read Ellen Goodman?
Mm-hmm. She wrote the most marvelous columns about 2 months ago. And it was on women explaining everyone within the family to each other. She explains dad to the kids, she explains the kids to dad, and she goes through all this. And it came out, this column came out right at the time on Golden Pond. It just really hit. And she said in there that not until Katharine Hepburn got out of the role, not until the boy and Henry Fonda faced each other did they truly understand each other. Not until Jane Fonda and Henry Fonda truly faced each other did they understand each other. As long as she was between them and explaining them to each other, it didn't work. The relationships didn't work. So we're doing our girls, our little girls, no favors to explain why the little boy pulls your pigtails is because he likes you. And I had done that day at school as a teacher. I had explained to a little fifth grade girl in my class why the boy had kicked her. And she said, you're doing him no favors. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember that article, Sam.
Yeah. The day it was in the book.
They're such caretakers. I sat down at the table one day, and I started to pass, take care of that stuff. And we laugh in my house. I said, once a mother, always a mother. I'm just taking care of the whole table. Caretakers, terrific. That's good, though. Now, I'm going to probably end up in a profession that's very nurturing. I feel fine about that, because I've built a few skills in that area. And if I can learn to take care of myself, without giving my whole self away, yeah, I'd be fine in that profession.
One of the things that I found that was peculiar and funny in terms of humorous type funny, but also tremendously satisfying for me and my family, is that because I was in a very demanding 3-year school program, sometimes they had to be caretakers. And they took it on and they thrived on it. And we all grew because of that. And there were times when my kids, for instance, would come and say, you look like you need a hug, Mom. Hmm. And they would take care of me. And even my husband, who was as traditional as they come, also learned how to be a caretaker toward me, toward himself, and toward the kids. Whereas when I was home all the time, I was always the caretaker. And so I think maybe I learned that sometimes when you stop taking care so much, you give somebody else an opportunity to learn how to do that and to grow too. And they will. It just happens. They will.
That reminds me of a thought about one of the things that stops us is sort of a little hidden question that we ask ourselves. Or we say to ourselves, when this happens, then I will. You ever do that? And so we delay getting to the then I will because we're waiting for the when to happen. It's a great delay technique. Now, close your eyes a second. See how this works. Dream your biggest dream. What would it be? No, nothing's barred. It could be anything. Do anything you want. And what's in the way? Okay. Want to share any of it? Someone asked me that in church one day and I started to cry. I knew.
Kids.
Time is in the way in that case, yeah.
Mom was bad in the age, that's why I loved.
I should have cried.
Say it out loud. Say it louder. Say it.
I just say what's in my way is fat, too much fat, and age. Maybe I should have cried instead.
What's your dream? Anybody want to share their dream?
To be a dancer, okay.
My dream was, since I was 10 years old, to become a nurse. And I have always put it aside. And I'm still dreaming, and I'm still angry at myself that I'm still dreaming. But I think with my children being teenagers now, I'm starting nursing school in fall. I've made that decision, and my husband still thinks they are too small, 17 and 15. So I just have to, so that he's in a way, when I dream my dream, I sell myself doing what I really like to do and will be good at, I think.
It reminds me, Marlis, of a real neat thing that someone said to me. You are able to do something in proportion to your ability to visualize yourself doing it. If you can't even picture yourself doing something, goodness knows you'll never be able to do it. So we have to be able to image for ourselves those things and actually see our body out there doing whatever that thing is, being whoever that person is.
But I have to admit, my friend Carrie next to me, she's 3 years ahead of me. She dreamed a different dream, to be a liar. And we dreamed for a while together, yet fulfilling all our motherly duties for another 2 or 3 or 5 years. And then she did it. And she is there now. She just passed the bar exam on Wednesday.
Right,
no,
not
passed.
So
she took it. She hopes she passed.
So do we.
She took it. And I'm not any further than dreaming. But
sure.
I did. I know. And you're all witnesses.
You certainly have a strong vision if you want to see yourself.
Yeah, I
do. That's true.
My concerns are that since English is my second language, I thought maybe I have problems learning the medical forms and all those. But I have talked to nurses now who have been raised in English as a second language, and I guess it's foreign language for everybody.
Yeah. That's the best medical terms ever, English.
Glad for you.
Me too. Mm-hmm. But my husband doesn't know yet.
You don't ask him.
No, I won't. I have everything set up and I will do it, and I have support from others.
That whole pattern, and I know that we all do it, whether it's big things or small things, and this is not a man's fault. I think it's us to some extent, but it's just the way we've lived. We ask instead of saying. And when I say don't ask, tell, I don't mean be bossy and rude and closed-minded, but we have to be able to say what it is we mean. Because we're human beings.
I'm working on a project at the seminary that's off, you know, off limits, really. It's my own time. And it's something I chose to do. And it does take, I try to do it evenings when Chuck is playing ball or doing counseling or something of that sort, so that I'm not taking away from our time together. It doesn't always work out that way, however. And I sense that he resents this, the fact that I'm doing something that I'm really enjoying. And I have a friend who agrees with me that Chuck resents this, and we ought to talk about it. And I said, no, I will not talk about it with him, because I don't want him to say to me, I'd rather you didn't do it. Because I would want to do it, and I don't know what I would do then, whether I would say, well, I'm going to do it anyway, or whether I would say, well, all right, to please you, I won't. So I won't talk. We won't talk about it.
Does he have the same concern over ball?
No, never occurs to him. No.
Well, I was just thinking, would he hesitate to tell you that he wants to play ball because he's afraid that you might say, please mm-hmm. don't?
Mm-hmm. I don't think he would. No, I don't think he would hesitate.
Did you
imagine him that you would say, please don't? Probably not, because I wouldn't. But whenever we get on this we've got to save money thing, it usually means me. or at least I perceive it to be me.
You see, when you let someone else know the feelings of your needs, that you should have no expectation that those needs will be met. You know, and so for him to say, I would rather you don't work on that project, mm-hmm. that, you know, for him to feel free to say that, it's okay, but you shouldn't feel responsible.
I don't need
to
feel responsible.
Well,
yeah,
we'll
talk about it.
I have a fairly, you know, a pretty responsible job, and I'm the boss. And one of the things that happens to me is, and it's so silly, is I find myself not wanting to hurt the feelings of people that I don't care whether I hurt their feelings, like the copier salesman on Thursday when I was trying to get away so that I could catch the train to come to Alden, and I needed to finalize a decision on a copier.
And I called this woman to tell her that I wasn't going to buy her copier. And I thought I was being really nice and polite to at least let her know. And she started trying to convince me again why I should buy her copier. And I sat there listening to her for about 5 minutes, of which I didn't have. And I was getting so angry, and finally I said, I am getting really irritated with you. I've made my decision. I know what copier I want. I don't care whether you think it's a bright decision or not. I've taken all the factors into account, and it's done. I called you to be polite. And she just sort of went, oh. And then afterwards I sat at my desk and I just laughed at myself because I thought, how stupid that I wasted 5 valuable minutes, even if it was only 5, and I didn't have 5 extra on Thursday, to waste listening to this woman tell me which copier I should have bought.
We all do that, I think.
One of the things I did, and I hear you talking, and it sounds like me because I could never be a salesman before, a salesperson, because I would always feel so sorry for that person. Oh, you don't want to buy that anymore. But I took an assertiveness training course about a year and a half ago and really found that it's a good thing to learn how to talk in ways that you don't have to feel guilty for just saying how you feel. And saying it in constructive ways that don't end up sounding aggressive and angry, but just saying, this is what I want, or this is how I feel. And you can take it or leave it, that sort of thing. And it really was helpful for me because I struggled with the same sorts of problems. I still do, but I catch myself a little more often.
There's a lot of joy in it. Every time you catch yourself,
yeah,
a little sooner. And
yeah,
a lot of pleasure in that. Some things we have to do almost very consciously in order to begin to grow. We have to purposely do little things that are different. This is not just a woman's problem. It's a man's problem too, but to try things that seem foreign to us, to just kind of spark up our lives, do something we've never done before. It builds our self-confidence, and it makes life so much more exciting and interesting. And that's part of our creative power, is to do that. We've been given that gift. And what is it that we could do, that we've never tried? I know what it is. I just thought of one. Baking a pie. I've been putting it out for 25 years. Did you hear? She said I should feel guilty. Such a womanly thing to do.
It seems like you have to go through about 10 things, though. You got to make sure that the kids won't be taken care of, and you got to make sure 65 things that are taken care of before you can do that special thing. It'd be nice to think of something and just go do it without making all those arrangements.
Mm-hmm. A lot of resentment comes from that arranging.
I feel that my daughter, she never really quite came out and said it, except that it was said kind of in my coming here this summer. At one point before I got ready to leave was, well, you're going away for the whole summer. And it was just, poor me, I get to stay home and go to school and mother's leaving for 6 weeks. And it was just almost like I shouldn't do that, And it's all right for them to leave. Mm-hmm. They don't sit around and hold your hand. They kind of check in and check
They're
out.
They're called Red Singers.
But I have learned to just, that I have to do some things for myself. Because they'll function very nicely. They have functioned.
Mm-hmm. I've started learning to to say there are things that other people can do, that I've always done. And my stepfather died just about a little over a week ago. And so all of the time I had planned to prepare to come to Holden was spent with my mother and doing the funeral and all of those kinds of things. So I didn't buy groceries. And my
daughter and a friend are staying in our house while we're gone. And there were no, I mean, literally, no groceries in our house. And we were out of everything. And I made a list and left her the money. And, you know, it was just like, I almost, as I was doing that, thought, I don't believe I'm doing this. A year ago, maybe even 6 months ago, I would have gone to the all-night grocery store at 2 a.m. because that was the only time to go, and I would have gone to work at 6 o'clock in the morning. But I would have bought those groceries. I had never left her with a list and the coupons and the money.
I think that reminds me of how there is that whole sense of not trusting that somebody, not realizing, just not even noticing that somebody else could do something that you can do. And I did watch a man after retirement start to, I mean, he was home, so he would wash the dishes. And did he want credit? Oh, we all heard how, you know, well, I do the dishes at least once, if not twice a day, I'm helping with the dishes. And I think it's all right to reward that a little bit, because for him that is a major change. But not to take that internally as in terms of guilt and saying, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe I better go back to doing the dishes. There's that little balance there somehow of praising the person who's able to do the job and then getting out of the way so they can do it. And not following up on it, and not giving in to what is basically complaining. I remember walking out of the house one night to go to do a speech, and John saying to me, "The water was no." He was going to fix dinner for the two children, and I had one of those boil bags of vegetables, you know, one of those green giant numbers. How do I do this? He said. My friend looked at me and she said, "You got to be kidding." And I was ready to go back and tell him. You know?
One of the things that we battle about at our house is that, and I picked it up in what you said, that concept of helping. Do I help do the dishes? At our house, everybody helps mother cook, clean, wash clothes, keep the house neat. All of those things that are technically, even though I'm a full-time worker, I'm active in our church, you know, I'm as busy as anybody else in the house, but they're all helping me do my other job.
Yeah, that is really an interesting concept. And one of the things that took me a long time to learn, too, was that if I didn't do it, just didn't do it, and waited long enough, that's the patience part. Things do get done.
Not all things.
Not all things. Not all things. Some of things never get clean. But things that I think, especially with our meals, that just to say I'm not willing to do that anymore does put the balls in your court.
The point too that she's making. That Lowell and Carol Erdahl made in their discussion on equality in marriage the other day. He said if he's vacuuming and thinking while he's vacuuming that he's being such a good guy because he's helping Carol with the vacuuming, then it's all wrong. He's got it all wrong. He's vacuuming because that's part of his responsibility. And wow, that really, I thought that was really where it's at.
I wanted to ask the question, though, it occurred to me that sometimes we use code words and still want to retain that as our work. Does Carol say to Lowell, would you vacuum today? And when he finishes, does she say thank you? Mm-hmm. And I think we do that, and that's our code word for saying, you just help mother. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, yet
and
it's
terribly rude to not say thank you.
Yeah. And I don't think that it's, I mean, part of it is my problem. It, and why this, I mean, I perpetuated that image all these years. I mean, you know, and I, even when the money got to the point where I could hire somebody to clean, if none of us had time to clean, somehow or other, that wasn't legitimate to do.
somehow or other, I shouldn't do that. And so then when time ran out, then somebody helped, you know, or somebody was given a chore to do. And it's a real circle that you get yourself into, and once you're in it, it's almost impossible to break it. Because even though I know that I resent that word, and I've made some moves to change the way I act, it hasn't gone full circle yet. It may never.
And I would encourage us again too to be, besides being patient, because it takes time, to be aware of what constrictions men have upon their lives in this society too. And what a responsibility it is to say to a young man of 18 or 22, the rest of your life you're going to take care of people in this way. You're going to pick a career now and you're going to work. That is a burden. To some extent, we have that marvelous advantage, and a woman was saying this to me today, of just being. Now, she was a mom and she was home and very active in that, but now that her children are gone, she said, am I ever enjoying not working? And I don't feel bad about that at all. And I think there's a certain freedom within being a homemaker, for example, that men do not know or experience. And it's kind of a shame that we can't do a little more exchange on some of that and more shared understandings of that. Because they're caught, I think men are very caught, and one of the best things we could do is, by being who we really are, free them up. Free them up to be a different person too.
A couple weeks ago, I did something I've never done before. I took a week by myself up at our lake cabin. But what I was going to do before, I didn't do it. But I was going to make a big piece of cardboard that said, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, a.m., afternoon, evening. And I was going to write in there, in those little squares, where the kids had to be. And all these little things that he should remember. Yeah. I was going to do it.
Sure.
I'm so glad I didn't. Because he was actually... He's a step-parent, and he actually was looking forward to just doing all that stuff himself. And I ended up just leaving with nothing, and I just said, they'll have to tell you where they have to be, and or you'll have to ask them.
I have an uncle who has said he wishes his wife would quit making stuff and filling up the refrigerator before she leaves. Because...
But I wanted to. I wanted to organize it all before I left, so it would, and I wanted to call long distance to make sure that...
Oh boy, there's a lot of stuff in that.
But once I got the stuff.
We've had an interesting role reversal in our house this summer. My husband is a teacher now, so I was in a summer job as well. And I worked for the school too, and was always off in the summer, but he would work. This summer, due to a cut, I have a new job where I work all year round. And he, because the budget cut, is off. And so I come home at 5 o'clock. And he's been home all day. And, oh, I've been so busy. I did laundry and I went and got a grocery. I don't know where the day went. You know? And it used to be that I would say that, you know. And he couldn't understand how I could be so busy all day, you know. And it's very interesting to see that, if you're busy, if you're home, it doesn't matter if you're a man or female.
And we need to close because the first setting of dinner is coming up, but you know. Wouldn't it be nice if the men were here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right now,
I'm going
to go ahead with
the tape. In some cases, we have to be pregnant.
What everybody should do is buy a tape and let their husband listen to it.
I do think it helps us to be in groups talking about this. Even it's better than being paired up together, husband and wife, for example. Even if you're a few couples, two or three couples, kind of discussing this together, because then there's a little more, there is more support for both points of view at that place. Well, whatever it is and wherever you are now, I would wish for you that to be, as the library poster always said, be all you can be. You've been given some gifts and some abilities and some earnestness and a lot of love, And you want to be able to use that as much as you can. And it's life-giving to do new things, to become more than you are today. That's a wonderful thing. So whatever it is, we wish each other well in moving out. It might be painful, but it's sure worth a try.
Yes.
I have one thing I want to say to all the mothers who think that they need a good excuse just to say, no, I can't do it, you do it, or to say equally to your sons and daughters is that you're really screwing them up if you think that you're being a good mother by doing everything for your sons and expecting your daughters to do a certain thing you're not, because that really gives them a double standard if you're saying, yes, I believe women are equal, but make dinner for your brother when I leave. Because my mother used to say that sometimes. She'd go away for a couple days and she'd say, now, I'm not saying you have to do it, but just make sure something's on the table. if I'd get mad at her because she worked so hard. And it wasn't, if she had said nothing, I probably would have done it because I respect her for being so hard working. But when she said, because your dad and your brothers can't handle it. Oh, my brother loves to cook now. Okay, I never cook. And he's 3 years older than I am. He's always writing me and asking me if I have recipes. It's just incredible.
Let me add, too, that listen to yourselves. Listen to how we talk to each other, how men and women talk to each other. We have just these funny things we do. And if you can catch yourself in them, it's worth a good laugh.
Give us an example.
Well, when we introduced each other,
oh, yes,
and said, I'd like you to meet Sue. Her husband is a professor at in Nebraska. She did it one day, I did it the next. It was worth a laugh. It was good, you know.
I did that once. I met some women in town, and it was like almost supper time, and I said something. They were good friends. You should be home cooking supper for your kids. And my kids were with me, and we got out of the store, and they just said to me, Mom, they just laid in at me and said, what are you saying that for? And I really appreciated them for catching me, but I felt so dumb. I really felt stupid. And it's that sort of thing that you just find yourself really...
just slip into it.
Slip into it so
like
much.
You said, well, but you're really going to think about that. So complimenting someone, a man, for doing something, but not thank them for it. Like that it's my work they did.
It's that whole thing that we learned with children. We don't say thanks so much as we say, you did a nice job, or it looks, or even more remote, maybe a little better. Gee, that looks clean. And they can take the pride for themselves, but they haven't just been helping. You wouldn't want to meet again, would you? How many would? It's okay. We'll see if we can build another session in, because we could go from here, I think. Mm-hmm. One thing I'd like to talk about sometime, and I'm not an expert on this, but we could use the materials we have here, is sexist language, especially in the church. And we could, that'd be a whole.
I don't know what the time schedule is for tonight, but do you have anything open?
Or are you leaving tomorrow?
We're leaving tomorrow. It's all over.
I don't think I can do it tonight.
How about tomorrow?
Let's see now. When do you leave? Do we have anything on Sundays?
Right.
Let me check it out with Charlie.
Is there some going on over Sunday?
We could. I don't know. I don't know. I'll check it out with Charlie and see what the pattern would be. Let's go eat if you're hungry. Someone else did the cooking. Yay!